Blog Talk Radio.
You have made it to Stu and the Nun, an online radio show that looks to inform, educate, and hopefully make you laugh. Stu and the Nun is a show focused on national security, policy, politics, and selfless service. We do this by not only interviewing guests, but also sharing our perspectives and asking you, the listener, to interact with us on our show chat room, via our Facebook page, and on Twitter.
Good evening, everybody. You have tuned in to Stu and the Nun. I am the Nun, and with me, as always, is the Stu. He is at the Northern Studio in Buffalo, New York, home of the Sabres, and New York State having its primary tonight. I'm down in the Republic of Texas at the Capitol in Austin, and I'm enjoying getting ready to watch and hear how the night turns out. In the Empire State, what's going on, my brother?
Not much, man. How are you doing? Good to be here tonight, joining you from the great Empire State. And a lot going on. Glad to be here with our listeners and everyone, and it should be a great show. It's going good. How are you doing?
Well, you know, I got nothing to complain about, my man. Like, life is good. You know, unfortunately, you know, Houston – Texas is taking a bunch of rain lately, and you know, so I got some friends down there that are experiencing the fury of Mother Nature and some natural disasters. But you know, we got some good rain here. You know, we're starting to pull out of this, you know, decade long drought that we've been in. So it's pretty exciting times here in Texas. Things are green, the blue bonnets are out, the trees are budding, and life is solid.
Well, there you go. That's about all you need. Yeah, you guys have definitely been getting some rain down there, and it's getting as high as I mean, I thought it was mostly Houston, but it sounds like it is reaching up in Austin pretty good.
Yeah, we got about 11 inches over the weekend.
Wow. That's having been just down there, I can imagine that lower. I imagine what downtown, you know, downtown Austin's pretty low. It's it seems like that would be pretty. Those streets of those homeless people must have their life preservers on.
Yeah, I got, you know, in fact, last week's guest, Jeremy Mahan, you know, lives in the Houston area, and he was posting photos of them, you know, in canoes going and helping people this morning. Crazy stuff yesterday and today. So it's you know, hits close to home when you see people that have been on the show and friends of yours out there, you know, like having to help their neighbors out, you know, and it gets primitive, you know, when you're when you're a voyageur in a canoe. It's pretty primitive.
That it is. It is, and you know, yeah, not a good thing. I mean, I've had floods before, and I'm sure you have too. It's a mess to deal with insurance and you know, possessions and things like that you're having to deal with. None of that's fun for sure. But,
no, like, and you know, when it happens to a lot of people, you know, not just, you know, businesses and, you know, residents, it's tough because, you know, like, one, there's a shortage of disaster care stuff, you know, nationwide. So, you know, when, you see, you know, people, you know, it's not like you can just call up, like ServPro and, you know, they're going to be like hitting you up and, you know, coming to your house and cleaning it out first thing. Like, there's a million people before you, literally. Houston's a big city. So it's pretty tense. So
that it is. So, yeah, it's a lot going on up here in New York. As you mentioned, primary going on today. It's kind of rare for New York or for many states at this point of the year to have much of an impact or really be cared about. So kind of a big deal here to be happening and have such an influence. And of course, a whole eyes, because usually by this time of year, through an election cycle, everything's been decided and nobody really cares or shows up. It'd be interesting to see what the numbers look like tonight on total voter turnout.
Yeah, no, right? Like, so, you know, here we are, you know, the great, former senator from there, you know, now Secretary of State. So I guess you could kind of call this like home state, right? Kind of. So,
yeah, it's a big home state. Well, yeah, Clinton and Trump both from here. Of course, Bernie's just right next door in Vermont, and Cruz questions what New York values are. So there's a lot of stuff happening, you know. Trump, everyone has been here the last few days. I mean, the calls have been nonstop, they had a big event, 11,000 people in HSBC Arena where the Sabres play last night here in downtown Buffalo, and that was a lot of pictures on the news and on the web of protesters and so on and so forth. So it's been, you know, right in every state, right? Ohio, South Carolina, all these different, New Hampshire have all had their day in the limelight. And for New York, it's not just the city. That always gets all the attention. So, you know, these folks have been jumping all over from small towns like Poughkeepsie to Utica to, you name it. They've been all over the state and given a lot of attention.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, like, how long this campaign trail has been going. Like, almost to the point of being tired. it's crazy how, like, all these primaries are and the rules and, you know, what constitutes what. And, you know, it's interesting to watch, you know, even, like, MSNBC, you know, the other day where, you know, this little piece went viral where, you know, as, you know, their daily show is talking about, you know, how the delegates and all that are being assigned. And, you know, the epiphany being like, it doesn't matter if you vote or not, like if this is how it works. And, you know, just seeing like the political process in action, you know, how it works for some and doesn't work for others. And, you know, it's crazy, you know, like how this all, and like I said, seeing how the numbers shake out, seeing what the turnout is going to be, how, you know, the effect of the turnout is going to be on delegates, you know, like what, you know, who gets them or whatever.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's, and then you got, you know, contested conventions and, you know, we have, like say, voterless turnouts and all that kind of stuff, you know, just when you thought that, the elections of, like, you know, Bush and Gore and all that kind of stuff and Obama and all that. I mean, just when you think all that kind of is behind us, it appears that, our election cycle and our political process can continue to throw out, zingers and keep everybody throwing off their game. Yeah, so, hey, we are trying to do something a little bit different tonight for our listeners. We are trying to do a little bit of video thrown in, and I'm not sure how that's coming across. Toby, are you able to get in?
We are trying to do something a little bit different tonight for our listeners. Oh. We are trying to do a little bit of video.
I just totally heard myself. Am I hearing myself on your speakers, Toby?
Can you hear me now?
Now I can hear you, yes.
Yeah, so I'm trying to join the hangout, I'm trying to watch it, and you know, there's a bit of a delay, so I was trying to figure out that. I'm also trying to join it.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to. I thought I invited you to join it, and I'm trying to see where you're at, and how I can. I hear a bunch of dinging and stuff. Yeah. I don't know where. I don't know why you're not in it.
It'd be cooler if I was.
It would be cooler if you were. Yes. I have it. There's a chat on here. There's all kind of stuff. Oh my Lord. All my friends are on Google are now hitting me, telling me that they see me. Like,
yeah,
no,
well, I see you. You look great.
Can you see me? Do I look right? Do you see my picture of GW and Miss Laura Bush back there in the back corner?
Yeah.
You know, hold on. Let me turn turn the Boohammer hat. That way the logo can be seen. I just realized it was sitting back there. I don't know. I've invited you. I don't know where I see the people at. We haven't done this in a long time, and they have really changed. They've really changed the whole process of Google Hangouts for sure. So, at some point, I'll figure it out. While I do, why don't you talk a little bit about our guest tonight? Kind of give our folks a little bit on that, who will be joining us.
I'm a big fan of the young man. His name is David Bellavia. You know, he's a man badge wearer. We have a special place in our heart for anyone who wears a man badge. But he's such an interesting story. I hope we get the opportunity to talk to him a little bit more about certain things. Like one, the guy's a gifted writer. Before he went in the army, you know, his education chops are pretty strong. You know, he's, you know, got some playwright skills. He's got, you know, some pretty neat diversity in his background in terms of education. And he's not your typical, like, knuckle-dragging infantryman, like, rah. But, you know, he really rose to the occasion while he was in the military, not just on one, you know, circumstance, which, you know, by the way, you know, one of those circumstances earned him a Silver Star. You know, he's the author of a really good book called House to House. And then, you know, he came back and made a congressional bid. You know, pretty interesting guy. And I'm excited to have him on. Plus, he's entertaining as hell. And, you know, he fits in with the Bald Brotherhood, minus the fact that he has a flowing locks. For the most part, but it's all good, and I'm excited to get to chat with him again and hear about, you know, movie deals and, you know, like all that cool stuff.
Yeah, we haven't talked to him in a long time, not on the radio. I have chatted with him a few times here and there, but it'll be is that an invite coming into you?
Oh, it could be. I just don't know where it is.
It's somewhere on your screen. I don't know where we got to figure this. This can't be this hard. It's got to be. I've done these before. I don't remember being this much of an issue. In fact, the first time we did this on the old show was with Jason Amerine. We did it with
him.
That's
right.
People that are watching are saying they can only hear me. That's because you're not on. So we got to figure out. Can you Google real quick? I'll chat for a little bit. I got some stuff to talk about. I'll try to figure out how we can get you in on this. All right. Yeah. So Dave's coming on. I actually had the pleasure of listening to him today. He made the mistake of telling me today that he was guest hosting on a local AM radio station. Dave is from Western New York area also. So he is, he was on there and I got to listen to him. So I'm going to be messing about that. He's back on tomorrow. He guest hosts a lot. He actually does a lot of radio programming. And unlike this show, he's on terrestrial radio. And after listening to him, I don't know how that's even possible. Of course, I say that in jest. But, yeah, so we're looking forward to having him on tonight. probably around about the at the half hour mark. So a lot of stuff going on in the world, a lot of stuff going on in politics, and well, since we are in talking about the New York primary, what's going on in New York, I need to talk about this a little bit. One of my good buddies, that I was in Afghanistan with, sent me a link today that just blew me away, Toby. We have a senator up here, Kirsten Gillibrand. She kind of fell into the job, if you would. She came on. She's supposed to be like this pro-Second Amendment Democrat, right? She was kind of pseudo-supported by the NRA and all that stuff. Yet she's been there apparently too long because she started flapping her gums, and she's made an utter disgrace of herself. And I think only because of all the news going on tonight in the New York primaries, none of the media have picked it up. But I'm sure by tomorrow it'll be all over because it hit Breitbart today. And what this waste of an oxygen thief said was that she thinks that Bernie Sanders is unable to now, keep in mind, she's a big, strong Hillary supporter. They're a lot alike. But she says he's unable to argue for gun control because he's an insensitive male. Yes. It's not to do where he's from or that Vermont has the laws they have. She says what prevents his maleness. I didn't realize maleness. I didn't realize femaleness. I didn't realize your gender was a condition. His maleness prevents him from being related to mothers who have lost loved ones to gun crime. Now, what this punt, I'll call her punt, because, you know, that's an okay word, even though we can say what we want here. What this punt fails to understand is that mothers are not the only ones who mourn for those lost. What about fathers? What about uncles? What about brothers? But what a... what a fascist, now card-toting member, frickin' female she is, to sit there and say, because someone is male, they have no right to talk about gun laws and gun control because they're not a mother. Like, fathers, and Toby is yourself, and myself both as fathers, and loving our kids and everything else, and probably a lot of our listeners, I mean... How dare she state that males don't have sensitivity to the horror that is happening in families? It just amazes me that someone like her, who is fairly educated and was able to convince a lot of people to vote for her, and has done. She's taken up some big causes. She was a big push on the sexual assault issues in the military and pushing for better accountability and all that stuff, which is very admirable. But for her to say something like this. Let me just say, for those in my circles and my military circles and stuff and my pro-Second Amendment circles, many of us are just losing our minds over a statement like that. Any thoughts on that or reflection? I'm not sure you've heard anything about this since it just came out today.
So I've only kind of heard like little snippets here and there. And then I'll be honest with you, the first time I heard it, I honestly was like, that's not true. She didn't actually say that. And in my mind, I was like, you know, there's a lot of misinformation going around both sides. Like, this is probably, you know, someone, you know, trying to egg her in, you know, like taking something that she said out of context. So I kind of, you know, poked around a little bit. And no, like, she said this. So,
yeah.
So one, I fundamentally disagree that females by gender have exclusivity on pain and suffering due to gun violence. You know, two, you know, I just think that this is, again, you know, a ploy to separate the gender voting base and say, like, you know, this is like the Madeleine Albright stupid statement of, like, there's a special place in hell, you know, for women that don't vote for a woman. Well, like, that's not sound. Like, that doesn't make sense. That's not always accurate. So I just don't understand, like, where the rationale comes from. But, you know, if it's a ploy, you know, it's brazen, it's, you know, risky. But, you know, the sad part is it's probably more likely to be successful than other things.
Yeah, it is. It just, it's sad that, I guess we got to give it time. I got to see what happens and what the media outlets pick up. I hope it's more than just Fox News that picks it up, which I'm sure they will. I hope the others pick it up and really call her out for such a insensitive what is it when you hate men or hate women? It's not racist. It's escaping me. I forget what you call
feminist.
A feminist, I guess. Yeah, but I didn't think feminist was actually meant to be a bad word. But I'll just keep calling her punt.
No, I mean it's not.
I keep calling her punt. But yeah, we'll just keep it at that. Anyway, so that was my early bald man rant, if you would, because we got to have Dave on in the second half. So I just want to get that out of the way.
No, I mean, it's crazy how, you know, things are being just flung out there. And, you know, I remember in 2008 and a little bit, you know, in 2012, you know, in 2008, sure, I kind of felt, while I did buy into some of the rhetoric, I really felt like the candidate of Barack Obama was that kid going for high school class president that was promising no homework, free pizza, hot prom dates, you know, anything that, you know, would get someone to be like, oh yeah, I'll vote for you if you like get me a hot prom date and I eat pizza and I don't have to do homework. Yeah, for sure. You know, like this so far, this campaign, even though it's still like hard to believe that, you know, we're in the toddler stage of it still, that people are willing to say anything. In you know, Bernie making those comments about Verizon and, you know, going and picketing and, you know, doubling down and saying, like, on any given year, Verizon, you know, I've been able to escape paying taxes. I did find it ironically funny that the CEO of Verizon responded to that on LinkedIn. Like, not on Facebook, not on mainstream media, but like on a place where either people are employed or seeking employment or engaged in some form of enterprise. So I thought that was pretty good. But also releasing numbers and, you know, looking at, you know, the numbers and, you know, being strong about it. It's just people will say anything hoping it won't get fact-checked. Like, that's why some of these debates, some of these, you know, campaign speeches are just horrendous this time, because it's like, you know, they don't even have to dial back, you know, what they say a lot of time. And that's in both parties, because it's just the race to get it out of their mouth faster versus accurately or properly.
Right. Right. Yeah. Maybe that's it. Right. The first one gets the headline is wins. And that's what they care about.
Well, that's absolutely how Trump's winning. You know, like Trump is and has been tried to say, you know, things that one are provocative, you know, and you know, trying to like, you know, whatever it is, he just beats people to the punch. He says it first, and then everybody else reacts to what he says, and everybody else either condones or condemns what he says. But like, he wins no matter what. Even if he's being condemned by it, he wins because he was the first one to say it.
Right.
But
right.
I'm going to hop into our green room real fast if you want to continue to entertain the folks.
Yep. Yeah, sure enough. Check, see if that's our guest called in. So, yeah, it looks like the polls – we have 35 minutes to the polls close. Interesting, a lot of stuff happening today in New York with the primaries. A report – actually, our guest, when he was on hosting a show earlier, he made a statement. It came across Drudge at about 6:40 p.m. tonight. They were reporting zero GOP votes in Harlem voting districts, not one Republican vote. So you got that. You have – there are some reports today of – people and dead people and all that kind of stuff. And for all of New York, the polls did not open till noon, except for New York City. New York City opened up at 6 in the morning. So polls are going right now until 9 o'clock tonight. And I'm sure our guest, who we have standing by ready to go, could probably even give us more insight to that, because he is much more tuned into the political scene than Toby and I ever could be together. He probably knows more about it than his pinky, because he's had to run the gauntlet of the political establishment a little bit. So with that said, I'd like to welcome on our old friend, our good buddy, and part-time radio host himself, Mr. David Bellavia. How's it going, Dave?
Hey, I'm great, man. It's been a long time. How are you guys doing?
Good, good. It has been a while. Are you driving back from the South Towns right now from your recent gig?
I am headed to a GOP get-together that hopefully I think we know the outcome in New York State at least.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. But, yeah, I know you stay pretty tuned in with that. So, you know, our listeners, you were today, I was mentioning earlier, you were today guest hosting on WBEN AM radio here in the Western New York area. It should be considered a mistake. You told me about it, so I listened in. But I enjoyed it. Even the jackass comment, which I was freaking cracking up when you dropped that one on the air.
It's hard sometimes to you know, maintain that military discipline all the time. I can't.
I don't know if I'd call it military discipline or filter out the military vernacular.
That's right.
Because
I promise to be on my best behavior for you, though.
That's okay. Every time you've been on has been great, and this isn't terrestrial radio, and you can say whatever you want. I've had the luxury of having many one-on-one conversations with you, and between the spitting of Cope and the F-bombs, we've been able to put sentences and paragraphs together. So I'm always impressed when I hear you say more than five words, and neither one of those things happen.
You're very kind, and I'm usually the one listening in our conversations. So,
okay, all right, I talked a lot. You got me. So, I want to give you a chance. I mean, you were very tuned in, so we just want to hit on right up front. We'll talk a little bit about this New York political process happening right now. You were talking a little bit on the show today. What is your take on things? We heard a little bit about some possible voter fraud. You had people calling in, reporting things. Any perspective on any of that?
Well, I think the first problem we have in New York State is that we have a lot of people that truly don't understand the rules in a closed primary. You know, when you have an open primary in other states, you know, Bernie Sanders is going to statistically do better in open primaries because his audience, his passionate group, his following, not only are they some of the most educated amongst us, but they shower every moon phase, and they're from all over the state when they come to these universities, and they're not exactly registered Democrats. In New York State, we have, you know, a lot of major political parties, but the Democrat and Republican Party in New York really isn't as powerful as, you know, I should say their equivalent is the Working Families Party, which is a very socialist left-wing party in New York. You have the Independence Party with a CE. And that tends to be not an independent party, but a left-of-center party as well. And so people find out that they register, they might tend to be Republican or tend to be Democrat, but they show up at the polling places, and they're outraged that they're not allowed to vote for Bernie or Hillary or, you know, Ted Cruz or Donald Trump. And it turns out it's a closed primary. You have to be either a Democrat or Republican, and there's a process in which that works out. And I think a lot of people were confused today.
Okay. Yeah, I think so. That one gentleman was talking about, you know, he was in his 60s and said he was even confused and there was some stuff he didn't know. Which was pretty surprising. Yeah. So, hey, you've been busy. You got a lot of stuff going on. Some movie stuff happening, and all that. And you got the documentary that just came out. So I kind of wanted to hit on a few topics. And I guess first and foremost, let's hit on this, the Michael Ware documentary, Only the Dead Have Seen the End of War, coming from really his time with you,
you
Dave, can you hear me? We had a little technical difficulty there. We're trying to... Everybody, just bear with us here. We're trying to do a couple different things new tonight with the Google Hangout. And, you know, it's the blessing of BTR, if you will. And, you know, it's all good. But the we have Dave Bellavia with us. Dave, can you hear me now?
I apologize for that.
No, it's all right. You know, it's really Troy's fault. He screws everything up. You know, I think the system knows when he starts talking too much that, you know, he really just needs to chill out. And so we put him into
right.
We put him into to jail, radio jail. But, hey, so tell us a little bit about Only the Dead, you know, See the End of War and your experience with that.
You know, I got to be totally honest with you. I had heard that Michael Ware was working on a project, and I had no idea that we were even involved in it. You know, I mean, the guy had been in Iraq for 7 years, and he's one of the more storied of the combat journalists. But it kind of took me off guard, to be honest with you, that it was going to be on HBO. And he had gone to the film festivals and whatnot, and he kind of reached out and said, hey, you know, you're in this documentary. It's going to be on HBO, and I just kind of, you know, I mean, it's strange because, you know, it's weird to have an event in your life and see it from almost like a third person to have, you know, something recorded on tape. And then, you know, kind of share that experience with the entire country was a little bit, it was a kind of odd experience. But, you know, that documentary is really about what Michael went through and what he experienced. And I was kind of, you know, I mean, I'm proud that he was able to get it and get a huge deal and get it seen by a lot of people. But it was kind of a strange experience to watch it.
Yeah. No, like, I this is a little bit different, but, you know, I had, you know, I did Bad Boudou's War a couple years ago, and I hadn't seen it in years, and I'm working on a film right now called Stronger, which is a really, really interesting project. It's a fictional piece, but, you know, it's kind of working, you know, with a post-traumatic stress team, and, you know, the cast and crew were sitting around. They watched Bad Boudou's War the other night, and I sat and watched it with them. And I hadn't seen that in years, but it was like really surreal to sit there and watch myself a couple of years ago in Iraq, and you know, and just see like the change in me and the change in stuff, and to realize like, wow, like that was me. So I imagine very similar.
That's a really good point because, I mean, we don't realize how much we've aged. You know, if you look at pictures of you before you deploy, the amount of stress when you see the stress register kind of on your face and in your hair and, you know, for me personally about 30 pounds ago, it's really kind of strange to be like, you know, we were really naive and we were really super young and we had no idea, you know, what that experience, you know, was kind of going to bring us to. And I totally empathize with where you're coming from. It's almost like a out-of-body experience to look at yourself in that moment in the present tense.
No, and being that it's like it's actually you, you know, and so I was really curious, you know, just coincidence that, you know, I sat and watched, you know, this the other day, and you know, Troy's like, hey, you got to check out, you know, Only the Dead See the End of War. And, you know, I was like, man, that's one of the very first things that came in my mind, because, you know, one of the things I'm like personally super excited for you, bro, is the House to House, you know, like, you know, you guys got that deal. You know, it's a great story. I, you know, no disrespect to, you know, Naval Special Warfare, no disrespect to, you know, all the great, you know, operators out there. But, you know, one thing that America's missing and lacking is, I think Troy's calling me, sorry, is the average guy in America's experience with war. You know, I'm not saying you're average, but in respect
no,
to...
You're very right, though. There's, you know, one of the things that I was really hyper, and I still am very protective of, is as a soldier, as an Army infantryman, I do not and I will not allow the story of Fallujah to be owned by one Army unit when so many brave Marines fought, bled, and sacrificed there. So one of the things that, you know, Hollywood tends to do is they want to make one movie about Black Hawk Down, Mogadishu. They want to make one movie about Fallujah. They want to make one movie about Ramadi. And, you know, I will not allow any producer, director, anyone, you know, state for the record and for history that this Army battalion, you know, did anything more than what we did, which is just a piece of the pie. And so even though the book is a little bit, you know, a couple of moments where we talk about the Marines and there's a lot of reverence there, there still is reverence there for the sacrifice, and this film will not be anything, you know, taking away from that glory, because the older I get, the more I realize how our legacies are important. And it wasn't SEALs and it wasn't, you know, recon units that won that fight. It was regular leg infantry, and it was a lot of young guys. And if you go to Section 60 at Arlington, you're going to see a lot of Lance Corporals that gave their lives in Anbar. And I want to make sure that any depiction shows that this was just one little piece of the pie and it wasn't at all the main effort of the fight.
Yeah, hey, yeah. I want to ask you, Dave, is there's a rumor that you may have told a certain director off because he tried to represent something the wrong way. I don't want to go into the details because I don't know if it's true.
Yeah, I'm not a very popular guy. I'm not going to lie, but listen, man, I've got a lot of friends that have gone through the film process and, you know, have been red-faced about the way it's turned out. And this is not at all, you know, these are good men. These are good American warriors that should be very proud of what they've done for our nation. But unfortunately, some people in an editing room change things, and they have to live with that. And they've gotten a lot of blowback because of that. And I'm just not going to have that. I mean, I'm not doing this for any other reason other than the fact that, you know, I think that there can be a war movie that is void of politics, that's void of any sort of separation. You know, we've seen a lot of, you know, green zone type of movies that were just crap from the beginning, and they show the victimization of service. They show, you know, a bunch of confused guys doing their thing. But I'm not going to have this thing, you know, we're not going to have transgenders, you know, we're not going to have every sort of petri dish of folks in this film. It's not going to be a social experiment. It's not going to have a message. It's about combat and, you know, good guys fighting bad guys, and chaos and sacrifice. And any other person that wants to make a statement, you know, go make Hurt Locker 3. I don't care.
No, please don't. Don't make another Hurt Locker.
Yeah, really. The EOD firefights are not going to happen.
Well, you know, and that's the funny thing is, you know, Troy and I have talked about this many times, Dave, and I can't remember if you've been part of those conversations or not. But like one of the things is like, you know, you don't have to push it up, you know, like you don't have to like, you know, get crazy and, you know, have out of control, you know, bombs, and you don't have to do that. You just, the story's painful and truthful enough, you know, and it's not how many, you know, like bullets are fired out of, you know, the commando gun and, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger's commando. It's actually the interpersonal relationships and that duress. I watched a film the other night called Everest, and I loved it because, you know, it was nothing wild and crazy. It was just the story of a hiking trip on Everest that went, you know, woefully awry. You don't have to have crazy avalanches. You don't have to have, you know, Yetis coming out of like crevasses and ripping bodies apart to be dramatic and to be real. And, you know, you don't need a Hurt Locker.
Yeah. Right. And then the only part I will disagree is I have to have a Yeti. I refuse to make this movie has to have. You know, it's really funny because I remember, you know, these guys in Hollywood, they really don't know how to talk to us as veterans at all. There's always this, like, reflexive, you know, I just want to thank you for your service. I want to, you know, they're really kind of, they don't know how to respond if they have to be, you know, a certain way when they talk to a combat vet. And so I the first conversation I had, I'm like, look, I want the third act to have a giant spider from space. I wanted to end with our unit standing atop the spider, putting in the Army flag in the spider's torso. But, you know, one of the things that I was really proud of is to find a guy like Max Adams, who's a writer here, and he's a combat veteran himself. He's a West Point grad, which, you know, is probably the only negative against him, is that he's a West Point grad. But he is a combat infantryman. He's a combat soldier. And he's a screenwriter, and he's worked with a lot of great guys, and he's worked on Boardwalk Empire. He actually created my favorite character on Boardwalk Empire, which is a World War One vet who had the hole in his face. I don't know if you saw that show.
Which one is
it? Boardwalk Empire on HBO.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wrote for that show, and he created that character from a World War One vet that had the mask on.
Yeah.
That was like so that was like my favorite character in the entire series. And, you know, he's a combat vet. He's been through it himself. So that was important to have combat veterans a part of this film. That was an important part. And the other part is that, look, you know, we don't want to be the greatest war film ever. I think that that's ridiculous for that to be your goal. I think at the end of the day, it should be, you know, there's a lot of unsung stories about, you know, the war on terror. But the most important part is we're not going to accomplish anything unless we, you know, decide that we're going to be dedicated to actually defeating our enemies. And you can have all the air raids you want. You can have all the drones you want. Eventually, the country's got to face the fact that 19-year-old kids are going to have to make contact with the enemy, and it's a tough thing. It's not just a sacrifice for a combat tour, but these kids are going to take this thing home with them and live with it for the rest of their lives. And I think there was a lot of ignorance in Iraq and a lot of people that weren't really prepared for what was going to come out of Iraq, and it's tough because you never know the way the film's going to turn out. But Universal and the producers and the guys attached to it now are pretty squared away, and so far so good.
So like the question, you know, that, you know, all, you know, 11 brothers and Mike's and hotels and Charlie's around the world want to know is, you know, when Josh Hartnett got cast to play Sergeant Eversman in Black Hawk Down, that was really a big step up for Eversman. Eversman spoke at my Enoch class years ago, and I remember, like, in my mind, you know, like, expecting to meet this really dashingly good-looking guy. And no offense, you know, Eversman, but, like, you're not the prettiest dude out there. You know, like, you're a good-looking guy, Dave, but,
we've already casted the film, and we found someone who looks just like me. It's country singer Katie Lang. So, I'm a little bit...
Oh, she's Canadian. I love it.
Yeah, no. I'm not a good looking dude. I've never.
There, that is
there,
a, there,
there
is
an uncanny resemblance there.
I think I'm the only guy that's written a war memoir who's, you know, who actually is probably the only character in his own, you know, memoir that is probably the least favorable in the memoir that he wrote. I don't know why that turned out to be, but, I mean, look, I want to be honest, and the Army's narrative of kind of what happened that day is a little bit different than what actually went down. I think there's a tendency to make people almost, you know, they tend to exaggerate valor, and they don't really talk about the fact that, you know, you're scared to death, and you do things because you have to do them, and not because you're just scared, and you react a certain way, and so as far as the good looking Zac Efron, I don't think you're going to see that, and as long as I have a say, I need a dude with a big old fat Italian nose and a big forehead, and I'll be good.
And a mouthful of dip.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's better than, you know, if they do my story, I'm pretty confident Peter Dinklage is going to be the first guy to get the call. But, I really appreciate what you just said. One is a leader that, you know, wrote a ton of awards, hoping to get credit to my guys for amazing stuff. We only had success with one Silver Star. You know, that it's tough to articulate what you witness on a 6.38. And for our listening audience, and, you know, the Army form to fill out, or the Department of Defense form to fill out, a recommended form on award is a 6.38. And it's really tough to articulate, you know, what you witness. And sometimes, you know, make sure that the next echelon, the higher command up, you know, approve that. People take a little bit of liberty. Now, you know, Dave, you're actually a very gifted and talented writer. You know, one of the things we were talking about before he came on is, like, some of your background. Like, you know, I mean, you got a little Shakespeare in you. You got some great, you know, playwright stuff behind you. But even that, it is super tough, even with having a strong English language, to articulate what is witnessed and what happened out there. And even what you just said, like, you do things because you're afraid, because, you know, your survival, you know, is dictating that you do something extraordinary. And while you witness it, while you perceive it as, like, I just did what I had to do to get through this moment in time, those that witness it perceive it as, like, something outside of that. And them trying to articulate it, you know, and I always, you know, tried to dumb down some of, you know, what I was talking to with my leadership, because it concerned me that people would think that was embellishment versus, like, what actually happened. And what actually happened was broke.
Yeah. The point you're just making is one of the most important points. First of all, it speaks volumes about what you consider leadership to be. But the second thing is, you're still in a combat situation, and you have morale to deal with, and you do not want to be the most decorated guy in your unit, especially if you're in charge of nine other guys. It doesn't look good, and it doesn't help out to be like, hey, we're going to take out this bunker, and I need two narratives from all of you after it's over, because I want you to remember what I said and did, right as we said. You know, I used to write the awards for the battalion, and I got a kick out of, you know, some of the awards that would be handed up would be like, you know, if a guy did something really crazy, I would always use that standard, you know, moniker, which was like, you know, the Army has this thing where, you know, showing absolutely complete lack of disregard for his own personal safety. And if I got like an award that was like super irresponsible and dangerous, I would always put like showing a complete disregard for his soldier's personal safety. You know, Staff Sergeant Snuffy, you know what I mean, made the ridiculous decision to forego the 120 millimeter gun tube and use his 9 millimeter. You know, so there's a tremendous amount of at times where you kind of realize that some people join the Army to check the boxes. Some people live by their DD-214. But if you really get down to the nitty gritty, people need awards. There are people that need that for their ego, and you see it in the factories. You see it in the office. They need to be, you know, employee of the month, employee of the quarter, and then you gotta serve with these kids. You can't use their valor. And you know what? Honestly, had I not had a videotape of everything, I don't think things would have ended the way they did. I think because I had an embedded reporter, because we had the opportunity to have it a little bit more visual, it gave me kind of a bit of a pass. But in reality, if this combat film, if House to House the movie, if you leave House to House and think, wow, this one guy, you know, this story happened, then to me, what's the point of doing it? You know, you might as well just, you know, hire a crew to follow you around and do your own film. This should be about the legacy of our generation and the fact that everyday Americans are doing things that are put in circumstances, and they're in our shopping malls, they're at the gas station. And that's why when you talk to a veteran, you show them reverence, because you don't know what the kid's been through and you don't know what the kid's done. And that's what the essence. If the film isn't that way, I'm not going to do it. I mean, I got better things to do with my time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, Dave, one thing I noticed in the documentary was that one part where you were in the house, right? So having read the book and knowing your story, I knew what was happening inside the house, and it was just deathly quiet. And Michael Ware is running back and forth. One thing that kind of caught me off guard, and maybe the way it was just represented in the video, was it was like he was the only one that cared. It was like your Joes were sitting out by the road, like just smoked, having a smoke, you know, going, oh, yeah. Sergeant Bell's in the house. He's handling some shit. I don't know. There's some dudes in there or something. And he's like running back and forth going, it's really quiet in there. I can't hear anything. I don't know where Sergeant Bell is. And they're just like, oh, really? Okay. I mean, is it? I'm sure it didn't come. It wasn't meant that way, but it kind of came across like the reporter was the only one that really gave a crap, and the rest of the guys like, Sergeant Bell's got a hand.
That was kind of unfortunate. I think what one of the things that wasn't really kind of made clear is that the house that we took down was like 400 meters away from the target house, right? And the reason why our guys were over there is because, unbeknownst to me, there was a fire mission called, and they were going to drop 2,500 pounds of JDAMs on this house. And so while they were waiting for clearance, you know, there was just no communications. I took off the radio. Everyone was asking for reports. It got really stressful, and so there was a lack of communication. And so unfortunately, the embedded reporter became, you know, the relay, and you know, he didn't know what was going on. He didn't even know who the hell we were, and so he was putting out information. And the guys he was talking to were not the leadership of the platoon. He was talking to, you know, the medic and the radio guy that were kind of just, you know, holed up with the lieutenant. The rest of the guys were actually making their way over to jump in the house. So it may have appeared that way, but no, those guys were certainly in the fight. And honestly, truly, I had no idea how many guys were in the house. I wouldn't have, you know, I mean.
You wouldn't have went in there if you knew there were like four or five dudes in there waiting to kill you, right? If you knew that number, you'd probably been like, let's get that JDAM on tap here.
Exactly. No, of course. I mean, Valor Awards, when you boil it down, Valor Awards come about because of complete lack of situational awareness or someone's incompetence. I mean, you know, when you hear about Paul Ray Smith jumping on a 50 cal and taking out a stinking battalion, it's because someone somewhere didn't realize that a bunch of Republican guards were on the other side of a wall, and Paul Ray Smith inherited someone's screw-up. Or you have a situation where a guy, you know, kicks down a door and there's, you know, 15 guys in a house, you don't know about it. There's never a time, very few and far between, do we have stories where a guy sees a grenade, knows exactly what he's doing, and jumps on it. And that's why the Rafael Peraltas and the Jason Dunhams and the, you know, I mean, these stories are just so amazingly selfless and need to be put on a separate level. But if you, you know, if you kick down a door and there's 12 guys in there, I mean, you've got two choices. I mean, what are you supposed to do? But by and large, I don't think very few and far between are these stories that are coming out that are Valor Awards end up being, you know, dude knew there were 20 guys in a trench, you know, and decided to drive his Humvee, which the Marine, the major there from Fallujah, he took his Humvee in a trench and, like, started bowling down like a company of, got the Navy Cross.
Yeah, I know you're talking about. I lost the name, too, yeah.
Brian Shantosh. Yeah, Brian Shantosh's story is like, yeah, he took a Humvee and drove it in a trench system and took out like a company size elephant. I mean, pretty stinking incredible.
Yeah.
But I think the problem we have is that everything is a competition, and we put things and we look at them a certain way, and that's not the way our generation should be looked at. And things happen, dumb luck. A guy had a camera, and that's the only reason why, you know, anyone cares about this story. Had it not been on a camera, you would have looked at the story and been like, oh, you know, whatever, I don't believe it. I mean, I hear stories all the time of, like, you know, I mean, no offense to Leanne Hester, but, you know, if a female, you know, shoots a 40-millimeter grenade and kills three guys, you know, that 40-millimeter grenade deserves at least an RCOM of Valor. I mean, it did a lot of work, you know. I mean, if the story results in someone, you know, throwing a grenade and killing a bunch of guys, or a person doing something incredible, I look at these stories that are coming out of Afghanistan and Iraq, and it's like, you know, why we don't have 15 Medal of Honors from Iraq, why Rafael Peralta had to have a neurosurgeon, a pathologist, tell us whether or not his brain was functioning. I mean, the guy fell in a grenade and saved lives. Who cares? You know, it just, to me, it's kind of mind-boggling the way the Bush administration sort of cheapened our generation's valor by making these things almost the American idol of combat valor. It's not supposed to be that way.
Right, right, yeah. Hey, we only have a couple minutes left. I want to make sure we get this in. What do you have coming up in the future? What projects do you have going on? Where can people keep up with you and find things out?
You know what? Nothing really that's important. I'm a dad. I got three kids I'm proud of. I'm out in Buffalo in the People's Republic of New York, and, you know, I'm doing some charity work. I'm trying to save the power grid and trying to help out vets with you know, a bunch of therapy ways, techniques that the VA won't do, acupuncture and working with different things in hyperbolic chambers and stuff like that to help traumatic brain guys. And, you know, just doing my part and nothing really special.
Good deal, good deal. All right, Dave. Well, man, I really appreciate you coming on. We kind of get late notice, and on a personal, we got to, you know, we're both right here in the same AO, so we got to link up and get together for a beer or something really soon.
I love that, man. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on, and we'll be sure to talk to you again soon. Thanks, buddy. All right, we lost him. There we go. Well, we are down to 30 seconds left, Toby.
Well, you know, like, there's not much I can say. Just like us on Facebook, you know, follow us on Twitter, as Boston Maggie would say, the Twitter, you know, at Stu and the Nun. And really excited about some of our guests adding some of these new features. So thanks for tuning in tonight, and we'll talk to everyone soon.
Everybody have a great night, and we'll talk to you next week.